Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation out of the 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is July 15, 2014, or it is the 19th day of the 4th lunar month, 2018. We will start our first service today with a song entitled The Beautiful Garden of Prayer. There's a garden where Yahshua is waiting. There's a place that is wondrously fair. For it glows with the light of His presence. It's a beautiful garden of prayer. Oh, the beautiful garden, the garden of prayer. Oh, the beautiful garden of prayer. There my Savior awaits, and He opens the gate to the beautiful garden of prayer. There's a garden where Yahshua is waiting, and I go with my burden and care. Then to love Him, His lips words of comfort, and the beautiful garden of prayer. Oh, the beautiful garden, the garden of prayer. Oh, the beautiful garden of prayer. And I say, Your ways, and You open the gate to the beautiful garden of prayer. There's a garden where Yahshua is waiting, and He bids you to come meet Him there. Just to bow and receive all new blessings in the beautiful garden of prayer. Oh, the beautiful garden, the garden of prayer. Oh, the beautiful garden of prayer. My Savior awaits, and He opens the gate to the beautiful garden. Okay, we're going to go into the observance of the Sabbath, part one. And we're going to start with a few scriptures for prayer thought that has to do with the word deliverance. We're going to go to Genesis chapter 45, verse 7. It says, "And Yahweh sent me before you to preserve your posterity in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance." Okay, verse 1 of Genesis 45, it says, "Then Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him, and he cried, cause every man to go out from me. And there stood no man with him, while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of the Pharaoh heard, and Joseph said unto his brethren, I am Joseph, doth my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. And Joseph said unto his brethren, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near, and he said, I am Joseph your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. Now therefore be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that you sold me hither, for Elohim did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in the which there shall neither be earing nor harvest. And Elohim sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance." Okay, what was that posterity that Joseph was told to preserve? He told his brethren that he was sent for a posterity, to preserve them a posterity. Meaning, to keep the genealogy alive and on track of the righteous progenitors of the earth, those that are of the righteous line. Okay, and so so it says in Genesis 45:8, it says, "So now it was not you that sent me hither, but Yahweh, and he hath made me a father unto Pharaoh, and Yahweh of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt." Now today, we are bringing back the Yahweh through the prophecy is bringing back the 10 tribes of Israel, which Joseph is recognized as being over in the north of the 10 tribes. And so we have the 10 tribes, and the 2 tribes are going to together again today, and the form of the 12 tribes of Israel, the 144,000. And he raised up not only Joseph, but the 12 sons of Jacob to be deliverers, saviors in these last days. Now it says in Judges 15:18, we're dealing with this word deliverance, and he was sore athirst and called on the Yahweh and said, "Thou hast given this great deliverance into the hand of thy servant, and now shall I die for the thirst and fall into the hand of the uncircumcised." Now this is Samson talking. When he actually got through killing 1,000 of those uncircumcised Philistines, so to speak, he Yahweh wrought a great deliverance. And that says in 2 Kings 5:1, "Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Assyria, was a great man with his master and honorable, because by him the Yahweh had given deliverance unto Syria, for he was also a mighty man in valor, and he was a leper." Okay, now this is Naaman. He was a mighty man of valor. Yahweh used him to deliver Syria. And now Syria today is an enemy against Israel. Okay. 2 Kings 13:17. "And he said, open the window eastward, and he opened it. Then Elisha said, shoot, and he shot. And he said, the arrow of the Yahweh is deliverance, and the arrow of deliverance from Syria, and thou shalt smite the Syrians in Aphek till thou hast consumed them." 1 Chronicles 11:14. "And they set themselves in the midst of that parcel, and delivered it, and slew the Philistines, and Yahweh saved them by a great deliverance." Okay. 2 Chronicles 12:7. "And when the Yahweh saw that they humbled themselves, the word of Yahweh came unto Shemaiah, saying, they have humbled themselves, therefore I will not destroy them, but I will grant them some deliverance, and my wrath shall not be poured out upon Jerusalem by the hand of Shishak." Ezra 9:13. "And after all that he came, and after all that has come upon us for our evil deeds and for our great trespass, seeing that thou art Elohim, has punished us less than our iniquities deserve, and has given us much deliverance as this." Okay, that's in Ezra 9:13. Okay, we're in Esther 4:14. "For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise unto the Jews from another place. That thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this." Psalms 18:50. "Great deliverance giveth he unto his king, and he showeth mercy unto his anointed, unto David and to his seed forevermore." But we're the seed of David. We're asking for a great deliverance today. Okay, from this beast that has arisen in the earth and has taken charge of all the nations of the world. All the nations are running after this beast today. Psalms 32:7. Thou art my hiding place. Thou shalt preserve me from trouble. Thou shalt compass me about with songs of deliverance. Isaiah 26:18. We have been with child. We have been in pain. We have, as it were, brought forth wind. We have not wrought any deliverance in the earth. Neither have the inhabitants of the world fallen. Okay, Joel 2:32, and it shall come to pass that whosoever shall call on the name of the Yahweh shall be delivered. For in Mount Zion, this is Mount Zion at the 12th hour, and in Jerusalem shall be delivered. And the Yahweh has said, and in the remnant of the Yahweh shall call. But upon Mount Zion shall be delivered. This is Obadiah 1:17. And there shall be holiness, and the house of Jacob shall possess their possession. Luke 4:18. The Spirit of the Yahweh is upon me, because he hath anointed me to preach the gospel unto the poor. He hath sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance unto the captives, and recovering of the sight unto the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised. Hebrews 11:35, women receive their dead raised alive again, and any others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. Okay, so now, what are we dealing with? We're dealing with the Sabbath is the key to all of this deliverance that we are looking for today. Sanctify the Yahweh of hosts with the Sabbath observance, like he has pointed out in Isaiah 58:13. Not even thinking your own thoughts on my holy day. That means this, all this news and all this internet and all this information we plug up every Sabbath day, it's got to go. It's got to just die when the sun goes down on the Sabbath. Let's go to 13 symbolic code number 5 and 6. We're dealing with the observance of the Sabbath. He says, the Sabbath is a golden class that unites Elohim and his people. But the Sabbath command has been broken. Elohim's holy day has been desecrated. The Sabbath has been torn from its place by the man of sin, and a common working day has been exalted in its stead. A breach has been made in the law, and this breach is to be repaired. The true Sabbath is to be exalted unto its rightful position as the Elohim's rest day. In the 58th chapter of Isaiah is outlined the work which the Elohim people are to do. They are to magnify the law and make it honorable, to build up the old waste places, and to raise up the foundations of the many generations. Unto those who do this work, Elohim said, thou shalt be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of paths to dwell in. Our main theme for the last several days has been restore. Okay. If thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of Yahweh honorable, and shalt not honor him, not doing thine own ways, nor finding thine own pleasure, nor speaking thine own words, then shalt thou delight thyself in the Yahweh, and I will cause thee to ride upon the high places of the earth, and feed thee with the heritage of Jacob thy father, for the mouth of Yahweh hath spoken. Verses 12-14. The Sabbath question is to be the issue in the great final conflict in which all the world will act a part. Men have honored Satan's principles above the principles that rule in the heaven. They have accepted the spurious Sabbath, which the Satan has exalted as a sign of his authority. But Elohim has set his seal upon his royal requirement. Each Sabbath institution bears the name of its author. an ineffaceable mark that shows the authority of each. It is our work to lead the people to understand this. We are to show them that it is of the vital consequence whether they bear the mark of the Elohim's kingdom or the mark of the kingdom of rebellion. For they acknowledge themselves subjects of the kingdom, whose mark they bear. Elohim has called us to uplift the standard of his downtrodden Sabbath. How important, then, that our example and the Sabbath keeping should be right. Testimony, Volume 6, page 351 and 353. From time to time, questions have come into this office regarding various important aspects of the Sabbath. Before his death, Brother Hollis prepared material in the question and answer form for a tract dealing with the subject of the Sabbath. Since it was never published, and since it is important that we have a thorough understanding of the Sabbath truth, the Code takes pleasure in introducing a series of the question and answer articles taken from the tract material. The question is to be discussed in this issue. The Sabbath, what is it, when is it, and for whom is it? Okay. A true secret writes, I am sending you literature on the seemingly scriptural doctrine that the Bible's Sabbath falls on a Friday and not on a Saturday nor on a Sunday. It looks to me unanswerable. Please give me a strictly biblical reply. Searching examination by the heavens all-revealing microscope, the Spirit and Word discovers the Friday Sabbath literature to erect the entire structure of his doctrine on Exodus 16, verses 1 and 2, which its author termed the keys unto Elohim's week. And so, if under the heavens' own microscope, his position proves to be solidly and securely footed, in fact, then the doctrine is to be reverently accepted. But if such examination of the position proves it untenable, then it should be dismissed, since the position is based on the Exodus 6:1-12. We quote those verses. And they took their journey from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came unto the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their departing out of the land of Egypt, and the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, Would unto Elohim we had died by the hand of Yahweh in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread to the full, for ye have brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Now I want to make a correction. Where earlier I said Exodus 6:1-12, it's actually Exodus 16:1-12. Now I want to pick up here on page 6 again, and it said, Then said the Yahweh unto Moses, Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove them, whether they will walk in my law or no. And it shall come to pass that on the sixth day they shall prepare that which they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily. And Moses and Aaron said unto all the children of Israel at even, Then you shall know that the Yahweh hath brought you out from the land of Egypt, and in the morning then you shall see the glory of the Yahweh, for that he heareth your murmurings against the Yahweh, and what are we that ye murmur against us? And Moses said, This shall be when the Yahweh shall give you in the evening flesh to eat, and in the morning bread to the full, for that the Yahweh heareth your murmurings, of which you murmur against him. And what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against the Yahweh. And Moses spake unto Aaron, Say unto all the congregation of the children of Israel, Come near before the Yahweh, for he hath heard your murmurings. And it came to pass, as Aaron spake unto the whole congregation of the children of Israel, that they looked before the wilderness, and behold, the glory of Yahweh appeared in the cloud. But then Yahweh spake unto Moses, saying, I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel. Speak unto them, saying, At even you shall eat flesh, and in the morning you shall be filled with the bread, and you shall know that I am the Yahweh your Elohim. Exodus 16:1-12. On these verses, the Friday Sabbath author features thoughts presented in the following 14 quoted paragraphs. We are also given the divine connection of the true relationship of the Elohim's days and Elohim's months in the 16th chapter of the Exodus. For Yahweh is at the proving unto the children of Israel, which each day of the week was by the falling of the manna. For the first manna fell on the 16th day of the second month, the day after the 15th, see Exodus 16:1-22. Okay, now the 15th day of the first month is the day of the unleavened bread, the day of Passover. That's a holy day. This marked the first day of the Bible week. But we tell us saying that the 15th day of the second month, okay. Or the 16th day of the second month, the day after the 15th, okay. This marked the first day of the Bible week, creation week. Now, the 16th day of the second month of the Elohim's year, as is shown elsewhere in this study, is now called Saturday under the Roman name. The second day on which the manna fell is now called Sunday. And the third day is called Monday. The fourth day is called Tuesday. The fifth day is called Wednesday. The sixth day, or preparation day, is called Thursday. And the seventh day on which no manna fell is now called Friday. This same relationship is maintained from creation, for we see that there that the first time that the moon ever registered time, which would be the first day of the month, was on the fifth day of the week in Genesis 1:14-18. And so now carefully read in review about the departure of the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, Exodus 12. You will find that they were instructed to keep the Passover, Abib 14, in Egypt, and then leave the following day on the 15th. Okay. Well, now, the 14th of Abib is not the Passover. That's when the Passover lamb is prepared to be eaten at the going down of the sun on the 14th, starting the 15th day, and they eat it on the 15th day, which is a holy day, which is your Passover day. We can understand the wisdom of Elohim in giving the children of Israel his true time, for he was showing them important feast days to keep, and as we will soon see, he was going to give them his laws to keep. According to the number of Numbers 33, 2-3, for the children of Israel departed out of the land of Egypt on the 15th day of the first month, Abib. Okay, that was on a holy day now. That was on a holy Sabbath day, the Passover. 15th day of the first month is a holy day. It was in the wonders of the children of Israel that Elohim performed one of the greatest of all of the Bible miracles, the falling of the manna. Have you passed this scripture over as being only a miraculous feeding of the children of Israel to keep them from starving to death? Elohim had a deeper purpose. According to Exodus 16:3, Elohim proposes to prove whether they will walk in my law or no. There is an outstanding date given in the Exodus 16:1. And they took their journey from Elam, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came unto the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elam and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month, after their departing out of the land of Egypt. Now this 15th day of the second month is a holy day, for those that keeps the second Passover in the second month. 2.5 or 3 million people had been on this journey for 30 days, and all the provisions they brought had evidently been consumed, and their condition became so desperate on this particular 15th day of the second month, which is a holy day. If there are those that need to keep the Passover because they were unclean to keep the first one, now that may not have been the case in their first year of departure out of Egypt, I don't know. Zif refers to calendar, but that the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron. They would rather have died at the hand of Yahweh in Egypt, Exodus 16:2-3. But on that same 15th day, Elohim made a promise through Moses, saying, Exodus 16:12, I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel. Speak unto them, saying, at even you shall eat flesh, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and you shall know that I am the Yahweh your Elohim. Now the first morning after the 15th day would be the morning of the 16th, the first day that manna fell in the wilderness. It is declared to us clearly that this is the first day of the week. No, it is not the first day of the week. Yetihalath did not have his understanding on the lunar months correlating with the weekly cycle of the seventh-day Sabbath. He's got us all confused here. Let's go on. They gathered in every morning for 6 days. Also see Exodus 16:26. Now this is true. They gathered manna for 6 days. And it may be that the 15th day fell on the seventh day Sabbath. And if that were the case, having a high Sabbath, in the first and your second month, if the seventh day Sabbath fell on the 15th day of the first month and the 15th day of the second month, then you would have the first day, the 16th day of the month being the first day of the week, starting anew. And that probably is what happened coming out of Egypt. So let us count manna. Manna fell first on the 16th day of the second month, Zif, or the first day of the Bible week, 17th, second day of the week, 18th, the third day of the week, 19th, the fourth day of the week, the 20th, the fifth day of the week, 21st, the sixth day of the week, and twice as much manna fell on the 22nd. There was none that fell for this was the seventh day of the week, or the holy Sabbath of the creation, Exodus 16:23-30. This teaches us, as it taught them, the true seven-day cycle, or the Bible week, so we can truly connect together Elohim's Bible week. Day of the week, one, came on the 16th. The second day on the 17th, the third day on the 18th, the fourth day on the 19th, the fifth day on the 20th, the sixth day on the 21st, and the seventh day on the 22nd. Elohim's seventh day Sabbath is called Friday on the Roman Gregorian calendar. Referring once more to the calendar, we use the key week and find that we can trace forward or backward. Tracing backward, we find that the first day of the first month of the first year of a three-year cycle comes on the fifth day of the Elohim's week. This new moon is showing the first day of the year, or the first year of the cycle, always comes in on the day which the Roman calendar calls Wednesday. Actually, Elohim's day begins on the previous evening, Tuesday evening, Roman time, according unto the scriptures, Genesis 1:23. Since Wednesday is the day of the new moon, and the new moon comes on the fifth day of Elohim's week, then we can safely say that the sixth day falls on Thursday, and the seventh day, Sabbath of Elohim's week, is called Friday, Roman time. Well, let's look at this. Since Wednesday is the day of the new moon, and the new moon comes on the fifth day, no. If the new moon is on Wednesday, then that was your fourth day of the week. You see, this for Viti Hara, one day off. One day off. He's got this all confused. Well, I need to make a little correction here. This is not Viti Hara's thinking. This is not what he came up with. This is the question that was being asked him by another man. And this other man was telling him how he had learned about this here, what took place there in the wilderness. So yeah, he was one day off. The man was. Viti Hara was just recording what the man had been telling him, telling him. So this is right, yeah. And I'm right in saying yes, that the new moon, if it came on Wednesday, was on the fourth day, not the fifth day. Okay. Let us continue. A Bible day is what sunset is from sunset to sunset, Thursdays. Sunset to Friday, sunset is actually Elohim Sabbath, Yahweh's creation. Okay, page 3 and 7. These comments by the Friday Sabbath author on Exodus 16, 1 and 12 reveal that his position has as its basis the assumption that there is unbroken chronological continuity between the event of Exodus 16, 1 and the events of Exodus 16, 2 to 16. The reason is such as to make it appear that the evening of the 15th day, the day the Israelites arrived in the wilderness of Sin, the quail came up, and that in the morning of the next day, the 16th, the manna fell. Upon this key premise, the Friday Sabbath doctrine is built, and thereupon it must stand or fall. Let us therefore prayerfully scrutinize it through the all-searching lens of the Spirit of the Truth and the Word itself. Close analysis of the scriptural record, symbolic close analysis of the scriptural record, Exodus 16, under consideration reveals that the only day of the month the inspiration names is the 15th. The day of the Exodus arrival and the wilderness of the sin, Exodus 16:1. For the scripture does not name the day or the month upon which Israel murmured. And it does not name the month or the day upon which the manna first fell, nor the day upon which the quail came up. These facts became absolutely evident when it is noted that not all the time elements of the Exodus 16:2-12 are chronological, are immediately connected with those of the Exodus 16:1. For the verse which deals with the day of Israel's arrival in the wilderness of Sin, verses 2-12, and on to 35. Briefly recount only the most significant aspects of the most significant experiences which befell them during their 40 years sojourn in the wilderness. So it says, two, these verses make it equally evident that none of the events they recount took place on the days immediately following the Exodus arrival in the wilderness of the sin. Any careful comparison of the records will bear out that the events in point cover a considerable period of time, and that there is a gap in the time between Exodus 16:1 and Exodus 16:2. Also that chronologically even the events of the Exodus 17 come between the events of the Exodus 16 verses 1 and 2. The fact is that aside from stating the day of the month, the Exodus arrived in the wilderness until the 15th, to be the 15th, yeah. The record does not name any other day at all in the connection with either the falling of the manna or the coming of the quail. It simply points out that one came in the evening of an unrecorded day, and the other in the morning of an unrecorded day. Furthermore, and again, contrary unto the theory The manna fell first, and the quail came days later, as we shall see. Let us continue now with our study. We're on page 13. It says, since the book of the Numbers, chapter 11, records the manna and the quail events in the greater detail than does the Exodus 16, we shall briefly examine the account as given there. For we remember the fish which we did eat in Egypt freely, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. And now our soul is dried away. There is nothing at all beside this manna before our eyes. Numbers 11, 5 and 6. Being displeased with their murmurings over the manna, the Yahweh commanded Moses, say thou unto the people, sanctify yourselves against tomorrow, and you shall eat flesh. You shall not eat one day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, nor the 10 days, nor 20 days, but even a whole month, until it come out at your nostril, and it be loathsome. Unto you, Numbers 11, 18 to 20. These and the preceding verses of the chapter definitely disclose that the quail came after the Israelites murmured against the manna, and that after they lost their taste for it, they became the more cruelest because of their unbelief in the Yahweh's ability to provide flesh food for such a great multitude. Unto their surprise, though, there went forth a wind from the Yahweh, and brought quail from the sea, and let them fall by the camp, as it were a day's journey on this side, and as it were a day's journey on the other side, round about the camp, and as it were 2 cubits high upon the face of the earth. And the people stood up all that day, and all that night, and all the next day, and they gathered the quail. That gathered least gathered 10 homers, and they spread them all abroad for themselves round about the camp. And while the flesh was yet between their teeth, ere it was chewed, the wrath of Yahweh was kindled against the people, and Yahweh smote the people with a very great plague, Numbers 11, 31 to 33. For these verses of the scriptures bring forth the firm fact that the quail did not come ahead of the manna, Revelation 11, 1 to 9, 13, 18 to 23, and 31 to 33, and that they were not there for just one evening, but rather for at least 2 days, Numbers 11, 32. This is proof in the absolute that the day of the Israel's arrival on the 15th day in the wilderness of the sin, Exodus 16, 1, was not the day that the quail came as the Friday Sabbath author supposes it to be. Okay, it says, it is surprising too that he has failed to note that it was not in the Elohim's purpose to feed his people with the flesh at all during the 40 years. No one can imagine that he was capricious to give them meat to eat right at the start, then abruptly to take it away from them and to put them on the manna instead. Moreover, had such been the case, then such rather than the contrary would have been the record. Also, it is understandable that just as soon as they saw that there was no way of making a living in the wilderness, they faithlessly envisage themselves reduced to want, poverty, starvation, and death, and straightway began to recriminate Moses over their fear, anticipate Lot, and to cry out bitterly for the sustenance for the food of any kind rather than for a special kind. Being pitiful of their fears and mindful of their needs, Yahweh sent them bread, manna from heaven, Exodus 16:4. Soon, though, they tired of the manna and began to murmur anew in lust for the flesh food that was not for their good. Thus it was that, though contrary unto his wise purpose for them, But Yahweh sent them quail, Exodus 16:8. Still, though, the manna, as usual, fell the next morning. So then, they had both bread and flesh to feast on, yea, flesh to the fatal full, Exodus 16:12-13, Numbers 11:31-33. Yes, solemnly affirms the psalmist. They spake against Elohim. They said, can Elohim furnish a table in the wilderness? Behold, he smote the rock, that the waters gushed out, and the streams overflowed. Can he give bread also? Can he provide flesh for his people? Psalm 78:19-20. The logic of the events and the sequence thus established by the psalmist gives corroborative evidence. Number one, that the bread, the manna, came down quite some time after the 15th day. Number two, that it came after their second advance into the wilderness of sin as far as the Bethidim, Exodus 17:1. The place where the Moses struck the rock, which then gave water, and number three, that the quail came into the camp still after that. To restate it, first came water from the rock, then came down the manna, and after it came the quail. The psalmist inspired statement, behold, he smote the rock. Can he give bread also? Can he provide flesh for his people? Declares that the Yahweh had already caused the rock to give water even before they faithlessly cried out their doubt of his ability to give them bread, and that next they cried out doubt of his ability to give them flesh. Failing to see and to reckon with these truly key facts, the Friday Sabbath author mistakenly assumed that the quail came first, then the manna, then the water. Evidently, he overlooks the fact that Exodus 16 itself shows that the events recorded there cover a period of time, all the days of their wanderings and the wilderness of the sin, which is a 40-year period, rather than simply a few days following their arrival in the wilderness of the sin. For the events of the chapter include even the spying out of the land, also the giving of the territory of the Yahweh, the law, from the Sinai, as well as the building of the tabernacle and the furnishing of it. Exodus 16:33-35 and 42-6. All these events are recorded in the same chapter, although, as we have already seen, the first event chronologically to follow the event of the 15th day, the day of their arrival in the wilderness of the sin, Exodus 16:1, was Moses smiting the rock at Rephidim, Exodus 17. The Friday Sabbath author, next step in the process of the construction of his theory is the fallacious contention that the evening, Exodus 12:6, of the day in which the preparation for the Passover were to begin was not the afternoon of the 14th day, but that it was at sundown on the 13th day, and that therefore the evening of the Passover, the feast, took place then at the beginning of the 14th day. This he does in spite of the fact that inspiration definitely commands, speak ye unto all the congregation of Israel, saying, in the 10th day of this month, they shall take unto them every man a lamb, according unto the house of their fathers, a lamb for an house. And you shall keep it up until the 14th day of the same month, and the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it in the evening of the 15th day, at the going down of the sun on the 14th day. Exodus 12:3-6. I added that last part. Carefully mark the command specifically exacts that the sacrificial lamb be separated from the flock on the 10th day of the first month, kept alive back up to the 14th, not up to the 13th, and killed in the evening of the same day. That is, the lamb was to be killed towards the end of the 14th day, not at the beginning of the 14th day. For the margin places the time of the killing of the lamb between the two evenings of the 14th and the 15th. The 15th is a holy day, the 14th is not. Biblically and traditionally, the one evening is the time after the noon. The sun begins to decline the afternoon after 1 p.m. The other evening embraces the period of the dusk from the time the sun sets to bedtime. These two limits fix the hours for all the preparations. Thus Israel made all these preparations during the 14th day and ate the sacrifice during the night of the 15th day, Exodus 12:18, Leviticus 23:6, the very night of the season in which, as the Bible plainly states, they not only ate the Passover but also left Egypt, Numbers 33:3, Leviticus 23:6. To make this important fact graphically clear, we subjoin the following diagram. Just how, therefore, in the view of these clear-cut biblical records, one can possibly conclude, as the Friday Sabbath author does, that the Passover feast was celebrated at the end of the 13th day, which, according to the biblical reckoning, would be the night of the 14th day. Although the scriptures specifically state that it is celebrated during the night of the 15th day, is indeed beyond all fathoming, not only the Bible's decisive explicitness concerning the time for this important celebration, but history and tradition as well make virtually impossible everyone's missing the fact. Yet, in despite of this, and contrary unto all, the Friday Sabbath author is led into rationalizing a one-day cutback of the event back into the 13th day in order to tailor the time to fit the theory, since he must have read the Bible through, and it is difficult to escape the conclusion that the error seems not so much a matter of the misinterpreting as a matter of deliberately sidestepping. And two, the figures on his charts definitely indicate that he has, in an attempt to make the theory fit with other events embodied in his study, the erroneous interpretation that Yahshua's statement 3 days and three nights in the hearts of the earth means 3 days and three nights in the tomb. Upon this presumptuous premise, together with his misapplication of the time of Yahshua's crucifixion and resurrection, and with his quail manna theory, he builds up the Friday Sabbath doctrine, obviously not reckoning with the inevitability that one day truth must storm its sandy foundations and topple it unto the ground. It will now be observed that in order to pop up the Friday Sabbath theory, the author of it was forced also to try to match the day and the hour of Yahshua's death with the day and the hour in which the Passover lamb was killed. Thus, he was forced into shifting back the time of the Passover feast from the 15th unto the 14th day of the month, although contrary to the scriptures. By such maneuvering and rationalizing, the author has the Passover lamb killed and the Yahshua crucified on the same day, the 13th Wednesday. So he goes on to explain that Yahshua could not have been allowed to celebrate the Passover. He then rationalizes Matthew 28:1 into placing the resurrection on the 17th Saturday evening, but even after all this manipulating, he is not able to match the time of the events, for although he contends that the Passover lamb was killed at the sunset, yet he has to admit that Yahshua was crucified between the sunrise and noonday at the third hour, Mark 15:25. He does this shifting of the events even in the face of the scriptural fact that Yahshua spent the Passover day, the 14th, with his disciples, Mark 14:12-25, that he celebrated with them the Passover feast on the 15th Wednesday night, Mark 14:18. That he was arrested that same night immediately after the Passover celebration, then tried by the Ananias and by the Pilate, and crucified and buried at about sundown, Mark 15:42-46, on the 16th Friday, find that he rose on the 18th Sunday, the first day of the week, Mark 16:9. Indeed, the Friday Sabbath author seems utterly to ignore all these biblical records of the events, and in this he shares in common with all the other 3 days and three nights scriptures perverters in a desperate endeavor to substantiate the 3 day and three night theory. All of these perverters of the scriptures try to tell us that the preparation day and the Sabbath of the Matthew 27:62, Mark 15:42, Luke 23:54, and John 19:31 were not Friday and Saturday, but some other days of the week. Significantly, though, in the observation that they often referred unto the unknown and so-called original manuscripts in the Hebrew and the Greek, to anything and everything that they can make to serve their purpose among those who have no way of checking them. Sooner or later, though, the truth leaks out that these many translation quoters never quote from the Greek Bible the preparation day and the Sabbath. And why not? For the very good reason that in every instance it reads Friday and Saturday, where the English reads preparation day and Sabbath. Take next the wave sheaf, which is typical of the resurrection of Yahshua, having to be offered during the Passover weekend on no other day but on the morrow after the seventh day Sabbath that falls during the Passover week, I might add, Leviticus 23:11. On the first day of the week, it too points out that the day in which Yahshua was to rise from the dead was to be on the first day of the week, the day after the seventh day Sabbath. Sabbath dodgers, though, are trying to make us believe that the morrow after the Sabbath is not the day after the seventh day Sabbath, when clearly the antecedent in Leviticus 23:3 is the Sabbath of the Decalogue. Besides, though, occasionally a rest day in the Scriptures is called a Sabbath. Never is any day other than the seventh day Sabbath called the Sabbath. Okay. So all the other holy days are called a Sabbath, but the seventh-day Sabbath is called the Sabbath. Further, the sanctuary law demanding seven Sabbaths from the day of the sheaf offering to the Pentecost, Leviticus 23:15, absolutely eliminates the possibility of any day other than the seventh-day Sabbath to precede the day of the sheaf offering, and thus the resurrection and the Pentecostal. That is, in order to get seven Sabbaths within 49 days and have the 50th day come on the day after the Sabbath, Leviticus 23:16, on the first day of the week. One has to start counting from the first day of the week, Sunday. No other day will do. Try it and see. Consider, too, the traditions of celebrating Easter, the resurrection on Sunday. In spite, though, of all the light on the subject, there is scant hope that these perverters will stop arguing themselves out of the Sabbath blessing. Tragically, indeed, that they will not open their eyes to see that the Bible makes unmistakably clear that they misinterpret the heart of the earth, that Yahshua by it did not mean the grave, that he was not 3 days and three nights in the grave, also that his trials, crucifixion, and burial consume more than one day. They seem bewitchedly oblivious unto the fact that the book records the hour of each event as follows. A. At about the sixth hour, either noon or midday, according to the ancient timekeeping, sunset at the 12th hour, Yahshua was in the palace judgment hall, John 19:14. This would be number B, at the third hour. He was nailed to the cross, Mark 15:25. And C, at the succeeding sixth hour, the hour while he hung upon the cross, darkness covered the earth, Mark 15:33. And number D, at the ninth hour he died. Mark 15:37, and he, at about the 12th hour, just before sunset, he was buried. Mark 15:42-46. Now consider the inspired record, number one, that from the 6th hour to the 2nd 6th hour, there are 12 hours. Number two, that from the 2nd 6th hour until the 12th hour sunset, there are an additional 6 hours. Number three, that there is only one 6th hour noon during the light part of the day and one 6th hour midnight during the dark part of the day. Number four, that it was at the 6th hour during the light part of the day that the darkness covered the earth while Yahshua was hanging on the cross, Matthew 27:45. And number five, that since the 6th hour in which he was led into Pilate's judgment hall was before the crucifixion, then if inescapably follows that the 6th hour before the crucifixion was either Thursday noon or midnight, the 6th hour and the night between Thursday sunset and Friday sunrise, why could they have brought in him to Pilate by the night? For the same reason that they had him arrested and brought unto Annas and Caiaphas by the night. That is because they feared the people, for many believed in him, and they wanted, therefore, to keep quiet the dark work so as not to create commotion or opposition. For the fact that the Yahshua's captors first led him to Annas, John 18:13-24, where they awaited the coming of the day for his legal trial before the Sanhedrin, which preceded his trial before the Pilate, is inescapable proof that the time which elapsed from the Sanhedrin trial to the burial was from the early morning, Thursday, the 15th, to about sunset the next day, Friday, the 16th, a total of 36 hours, and since the hours from his burial about sunset Friday to the resurrection about sunrise Sunday make a total of another 36 hours, and then the grand total of the hours in which he was in the custody of the Sanhedrin is 72 exactly, 3 days and 3 nights. This brings to close our studies. Our contact us at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on the audio archives to hear this message and more. We're going to close now with a song. He touched me. Shackled by a heavy burden, need the load of guilt and shame. Then the hand of Yahshua touched me, and now I am no longer the same. He touched me, oh, he touched me, and oh, the joy that floods my soul. Something happened, and now I know he touched me and made me whole. Since I met the blessed Savior, since he came and made me whole, I will never cease to praise him. I shall it while eternity rolls. He touched me, oh, he touched me, and found the joy that floods my soul. Something heaven, and now I know he touched me and made me whole.